Something seems different today. No, not sure what it is.
The screeching one is not here.
And I like it.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast, streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can listen live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. On today's show, we're going to welcome back Dr. Evan Goldstein for this month's Tales from the Tale. Today's topic, well, it's how the fear of STIs can affect one's sexual experiences. That and much more with the great doctor on the second half of the show. My name is Tom, and I am your host, and we're going to see how this goes today because we didn't have time to rehearse this, but Nick, aka Trish, will not be joining us today. He is actually very busy doing opening night at the theater. It's gala, and so joining us instead is our returning guest, ladies and gents.
Hi, it's Elsie.
And
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to
The Dish.
See, I told you. You missed it. We totally weren't going to get it, but I kind of figured that would happen. Let me just raise your mic a little bit. All right, so welcome back to another show. We do have a lot that we're going to be talking about today. Today's cocktails, we're just going to jump right in. Deep, balls deep and all that good stuff, or lips deep. I don't know.
Yes.
So we have Elsie here in the building with us in studio because, again, Nick is not joining us. So, Elsie, how are you?
I'm good. Overwhelmed and exhausted from school and work. Did you just kind of...
I sure did. I want you to get into that microphone.
Mic slapped me. Yeah. But I'm good. I'm happy to be here. I've missed you guys.
I know. I'm excited that you're back. You know, the last time you were here, I was here, right?
Yes.
I don't remember a lot.
We were all here nowadays.
But it's always good to have you, you know, on with us because you bring a very, very unique perspective to some of the conversations that we have on the show. And Hans loves you.
I love Hans back.
And Christopher, how are you, darling?
I'm tired.
I know.
I had a long week.
Yeah. Christopher took a nap before he got here, and he's like...
I'm so, like, groggy right now. It was an unplanned moment of slumber.
So we gave him a little bit of what today's cocktail is going to be. We're super lazy today. And I also gave him a Red Bull. I was like, here, drink this.
I need a little something, Yeah.
So speaking of cocktails... Back to that. Christopher, what are we drinking today?
We're drinking cocktails that were already put together for us.
That's right.
We are drinking Truly.
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 We're not sponsored by Truly, but that's what we are drinking. I have passion fruit. What do you have?
I have pomegranate.
Chris?
Ooh, and I have mango. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they have like all these different flavors. So there's a citrus blend, a box, or you can get like a tropical fruit box. So they have all these different kinds, and they're very good.
And now I just want to hear Jess... say mango. I like the way she says mango.
And it's only 100 calories.
Ooh,
so, you know, lemon. It's super super good for the waistline, even though I don't know what the hell happened to me. But oh God, it's been crazy week. And you know, for me, I worked this weekend. I've had much of a headache for the past like 3 days. And even today, I still have a mild headache. But I've been drinking a lot of water because, you know, sometimes they say when you have a headache, it's due to the fact that you're dehydrated. Mm-hmm. And so I've been trying to drink water. And although this doesn't count.
It counts. Most of it is water.
Yeah. I did my share today. So here we are. My God, it's June. Happy Pride to everyone, by the way. Mm-hmm. It is Pride Month. There's so much going to be going on. All over the place. There's prides all over the world going on, but it is going to be World Pride in New York City at the end of this month. And
are we going to that?
Hopefully, yeah. We're trying to see if we can work out the logistics of how that's going to happen because, you know, I have babies.
I might have to jump, but you know, I've never been to a pride parade.
Stop it.
I know.
It's like
you should revoke my card.
Well, no. You can tell Mr. Poncho there that he can call back later.
My nephew.
So, oh, okay. So, yeah, it's Pride in New York. So you've never been to a Pride.
I have never been to a Pride. Well, I don't do parades in general.
So first of all, you lived in New York.
That is where I grew up. Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. Don't make that disgusting face. I know. I didn't even go to the Dominican parade, though.
But it doesn't matter.
In my defense.
It's like...
Crowds make me a little anxious.
You're such like an amazing ally, and you've never been to a pride parade.
I know, and I'm thinking that maybe this year I should tag along with you guys.
You should.
Just, you know, gay it out.
And then we'll end up in your, you know, brewery.
Yes.
Sometime, and then just go nuts. That's right.
Yeah.
How's that going?
It's going well. It's going well. The pop-up sales are doing great with
That's
the
amazing.
Vinyl, so it's a good time. Summer's around again, so the backyard is open.
So I want to give you an opportunity to remind us what it is that you have, what you've partnered in for our listeners that may live in the city and want to go.
So Beer Wax, the concept is based on, you know, jazz bars in Japan. The concept is craft beer and vinyl records, lots of 90s hip hop.
Oh, nice.
Salsa, all that kind of good stuff. It's always great music in there. We have rotating lists of DJs that come and spin. We have the pop-up sales, which are great if you're into vinyl. We have great stuff in those boxes that you can peruse while you drink beer. And then we have a lovely backyard that's open the minute that the weather permits. And then we have also partnered with a local winery because we've got some grapes, grapevines out in the backyard. So they are now collecting those grapes for their wine. So that's kind of cool.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and business is going good. So obviously you guys are really like trying to like really branch out into a lot of different things.
Right.
Well, right. That's
awesome. It is growing into a full brand. We have merch. So beerwax.com. Go get you some caps.
Nice. And, nice, and nice. Where is the place exactly?
It's Vanderbilt Avenue, 54 Vanderbilt. Is just down the block from Barclays. So if you're at a game, walk on down to us.
That's
awesome.
Right.
Sweet. And those awesome. The records that you sell, it's all genres of music?
All genres.
I would be stuck in there for hours.
Yes.
And I would spend so much money because I get the second I get the slightest buzz, I'm like, I need this record. I need this record. I need this record.
Yes. So please come.
I'll tell you something. So one of our customers came into the bar, and he's an older man, and he's got a very, very healthy collection of records. And I mean... records, like maybe five or six of this room filled with records.
That's awesome.
And he says to me, you know, I'm downsizing, I'm moving, I'm going to sell the house and I'm leaving, and I'm looking for someone to take this collection. And he's like, would you like it? And I'm like, I'll find a Vitrola, but hell motherfucking yeah.
Yeah.
Not only does he have a collection of records everywhere, but he also has a massive video VHS collection of movies and DVDs. I mean, this man was a collector.
Oh, cool.
And he was showing me pictures, and everything is so organized and very beautiful. And I'm like, holy crap, where am I going to fit that in my house?
We'll take some off your hands.
Yeah, it's like, I will be rummaging through searching for Jefferson Airplane.
Yeah.
So, and yes. He does a lot of all of those like classics. He said he's got a lot of like Janis Joplin,
awesome.
And he's got a lot of Jimi Hendrix and like the Beach Boys, the Beatles. I was like, yeah, that's you've got history right
yes,
there.
Yes.
On vinyl.
Tommy will take it. We made the decision.
Yeah.
Yes. So we'll have a little beer party and come peruse.
There
yeah,
we go.
So I'm excited. Good. And so, yeah, that was fun. So, all right. So, listen, we do have Dr. G joining us. I'm excited about that in 15 minutes. So why don't we jump into some of the things that, you know, we're going to talk about today. I don't know if anybody noticed, but on our website, we started on June 1st. A series, and it's called Pride Icon Spotlight. And so what we decided to do was that we were going to take one of those visionary people that, you know, were around for the Stonewall riots and all these activists, and we were going to showcase them one by one, at least 20 of them, on our website. So we already did the first one we published, and so we decided that we were going to go with Brenda Howard first. And the reason why we chose Brenda Howard is because she is known to most who know who she is known as the Mother of Pride. So I just wanted to just go over a little bit of stuff on her and tell you a little bit about her. So Brenda Howard was an American bisexual rights activist. She was also a sex positive feminist and also someone who was a polyamorous. Excuse me. Thank you. Jesus.
Proud of you.
Truly. So she is known as the mother of pride. And the reason why is because soon after the Stonewall riots the following year, she was very critical and crucial in organizing one of the first liberation movements or marches that took place on Christopher Street to commemorate the one-year anniversary of the Stonewall riots. And then she eventually got together with some friends and she made the decision and said, you know, we should have a week-long celebration to celebrate what happened here and how historic and how, you know, fast forward all of that pushing was, you know. And so she, along with her friends, were the ones that said, you know, and we should call these events Pride, you know, because we want to signify how proud we are of who we are as a people. And so we did publish that one on our website. You can go ahead and, you know, take a look at the actual article itself. And then there's some information on her because we feel it's important for us to know who those activists were that really got us an opportunity to be able to have the freedoms that we have today. You know, and it's amazing. So before she died in 2005, she actually did an interview with one of the major TV networks, and they had asked her a question and said, you know, if you could describe yourself, what would it be? And she just simply said, well, bi, poly, switch. I'm not greedy, but I know what I want. And so, you know, this is a very spicy, very feisty, amazing woman. And so I just wanted to take an opportunity and thank her, even though she's no longer with us, for fighting the fight. Mm-hmm. Because there wouldn't be any gay talk today if that were not the case. And so what we're going to do is every day of the week for the next month, we're going to be posting someone else. Today's person of choice was actually Edith Windsor. And if the name sounds familiar, it's because of her that the Defense of Marriage Act was actually struck down. And we were able to actually use that in conjunction with other elements of the, you know, marriage equality fight to actually gain marriage equality in 2015. And so we also have a little bit about her on there as well. So.
Very nice.
And that's that. So, Christopher, mm-hmm. What's up your sleeve today?
My sleeve today?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just tired.
You're tired?
I spent a lot of time away this past week.
Where'd you go?
On Wednesday, I saw Lion King on Broadway.
Nice. Oh, did you love it?
It was
and
so good.
And tell me how much.
I don't know. It was a gift.
No, I mean how much you loved it.
Oh, I freaking...
I've been, so I know.
I was absolutely obsessed with it. Absolutely obsessed
right?
with it. They were fantastic. I got an elephant butt hit me as they were walking down the...
Nice.
I got knocked in the head. I'm like, that's a big-ass elephant walking by me right now because they come down the aisles and everything. The characters were just so much fun. It brought me back. I did have a little PTSD watching Mufasa die again.
Ah.
Spoiler alert, you know, if you were born after the 90s.
Right.
but the new movie's coming out, too.
And that's a live-action one. Yeah,
it's a live-action movie, and the CGI looks amazing.
Amazing. I know. That stage is just...
It was incredible. Yeah.
I cannot wait.
I took my niece there. She cried and then thanked me for bringing her there.
That's
she's
beautiful.
My favorite, but she's not my favorite.
But that's beautiful.
it is.
It's amazing. That entire production is just
It really
amazing.
Is. I mean, I had been to Broadway numerous times before, but it's been so long and I almost forgot the magic of Broadway.
Yes.
It was like absolutely insane. That scene where Simba is looking at Rafiki, is telling Simba to look into the water to see his father.
Yeah.
And they have all these people coming out. You can't see them, and they're holding sticks that have, like, these white cloths.
Ugh.
And I'm like, oh, my God, they're going to put it together, and it's going to be his freaking massive face. It was so out of this world cool. And Timon and Pumbaa were so freaking funny. They were like, Hakuna
yes.
Matata.
Well, hello, that's why they got their own show.
It's so good. So
right,
good.
Because they ended up getting their own cartoon show.
They did
show
have
for a while.
Yeah, they had a spinoff show.
That's how amazing they were.
And I went up to the Empire State Building, which I'd never done before. And
nice.
It was there was a thunderstorm. So we were
Ooh.
Up there in the pouring rain and lightning was going everywhere. It was terrifying and exhilarating at the same time. It was like
That's
amazing
awesome.
Experience.
See, you're a New Yorker and living in Connecticut, obviously, now. But have you done any of that stuff, like the Empire State Building?
Yes. It's actually the thing I do with my niece. We do internal tourism. And so we do everything that tourists come to town for. And she loves it. She loves it.
It is cool.
And we do the Beast. We do South Street Seaport. And we walk around downtown 42nd Street like we're tourists. We do the whole capturing your face in the screen where there's that camera that gets like the crowd.
Mm. On
we
Times
do the
Square?
Whole thing. Yes.
Yeah. She like, does everything except steps. Pride.
I do everything except Pride. And any other really parade in my defense.
But she is going to do Pride this year.
It's happening.
So we're going to try to make her drag her out.
I think I'm going to actually, you know, put that in my calendar.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Solid when yeah. I put stuff on there.
It's the last Sunday of the month of June. So that weekend is going to be lit in New York City.
And I actually kicked off Pride this weekend too. I went to the Governor's Ball on Randall's Island in New York, and we're working together with New York Pride. There was, they were doing the rainbow Bud Lights. They had rainbow flags everywhere. They would have hashtag Pride everywhere. So many people were walking around, you know, wearing proud shirts saying be proud or just having the rainbows. And it was just like such a good time, such good energy. And
that's awesome.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. We saw Florence and the Machine and we were like right in front. I'd never.
Nice.
Yeah. And she.
They put in a good show.
She's so good.
Yo.
Like I knew they were good, but I never really listened to them. I am obsessed now. That was such a fantastic show.
Yes.
She was so good. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. So that was a busy weekend. That's and then we awesome. Went to a botanical garden yesterday and I met the violinist who was performing with the cellist. We're friends now on Facebook.
Clearly.
Yeah, we just sat outside in the Rose Garden drinking wine.
I know, you were posting a lot of videos on...
You were the botanical garden where?
I don't remember. It's like 250 acres.
This was where?
In New York.
In New York.
The New York Botanical Garden.
Bronx?
Yeah, it was in the Bronx.
It's actually one of the best botanical gardens in the world, if you didn't know that.
It's fantastic.
That place is amazing. The shows they put on, the exhibits, that place is amazing.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it there. And I bought
You're
a
welcome.
Yo-yo. Thank you. I bought a yo-yo, and I'm getting that shit came right back to me like it was back in 95. It was fantastic. Got me an
That's
old school
awesome,
Dunkin'.
Awesome, though. That sounds like it's a
I recommend
hoot.
It. If you can get to it. I definitely recommend it. It was gorgeous there. Absolutely beautiful. And it smelled amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course it did.
All right, well, you listen. Can only say that about that one specific place in the Bronx.
Yeah, right. Exactly, exactly.
Oh my we got God. You beat, Jersey.
That is too funny. All right, well, listen, on that note, it is 6:50 p.m. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. We'll leave you with some music. And when we come back, we're going to have Dr. Evan Goldstein join us to talk about today's topic. So here's some music, and we will be right back.
Hard to see you with a man you call your friend, but in the end I know I don't have much time to tell you why I wanna die, but then I cry, so then I lie, so I don't make you bend time. 'Cause if you Yeah.
right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, from the break. That was Time by Pat Riley, a previous guest of ours. And of course, yes, a new song on our roster. And given Dr. Goldstein's reaction to it, it's just amazing. Anyway, as you know, joining us is Dr. Evan Goldstein for this month's Tales from the Tale. Today's topic is going to be how fear of STIs can affect one's sexual experiences. So, Dr. G, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, everybody. How you doing?
We're doing wonderful. As you can see, Trish is gone today.
And it's just lovely. Yes.
Wow,
and
look, I like this rendition of Trish.
She got a suntan today. So we have our friend Elsie here who's filling in for Trish because she's doing gala today and at the theater. And so, you know, it's one of their biggest fundraisers. And so she couldn't be with us today, but we're here. And we love
you. Awesome. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
So as we said, we were going to be covering one of your blog posts on medium.com, which talks about how the fear of STIs could affect one's sexual experiences. And I wanted you to sort of kind of like lay the groundwork for us, tell us a little bit about the blog post, and then we can move into a discussion about it.
Yeah, sure. That sounds cool. So this was interesting because this came through kind of our social channels of a lot of people reach out to us with a lot of issues that they're going through. I necessarily didn't truly see this person, but we had a lot of communication. And I just thought the story was quite interesting because it's really related to so many people that I see all the time, which is obviously the fear from an STD perspective. This is a complicated story. Did you read it?
Yes, I did.
I did too.
Yes, we did. There's a lot. There's
a lot to digest. Right?
That's right.
Yes. So, I mean, I think the crux of it is a 44-year-old guy who grew up during, which a lot of us did, the AIDS epidemic, and was in a religious family per se, and grew up kind of not in an urban dwelling, in urban cities, and was really, you know, obviously the thought of being gay was just a terrible thought even from the beginning. And then obviously he realized sexually that he was attracted to men, but in that kept it hidden, wound up actually marrying someone, even though obviously internally he didn't necessarily want to, and then talked a lot about what he actually had to do to engage with the woman, from being drunk and always had to do that, did have kids with the woman, and then finally decided that enough is enough. And then after he got a divorce, wound up going on gay.com and searching kind of his fantasies, and right away found what he felt was the man of his dreams, gorgeous and the like. And then started to slowly engage sexually, first just with the usual kind of oral, and then slowly starting to get more and more into the anal world with condoms at that time, and then slowly went into obviously the bareback world. And then from there, it was really fraught with significant complications. And I think a lot of it was access to limited care. He developed kind of burning sensations and some discharge and some kind of stuff that is a clear telltale sign of something going on, was kind of misdiagnosed. And some of that was because he was trained as a medical professional and did know a lot of people in that small community. So you can imagine even just seeking care to disclose, he wound up disclosing just because he felt like he could. And then it kind of backfired as well in that situation, making him feel even more stigmatized from it. And then it kind of spearheaded a lot of misdiagnosis for a while, which then finally led him down to a urologist that seemed totally gay-friendly, totally understood the situation, and then diagnosed two things at that time: chronic gonorrhea, which had been going on for a really, really long time, and then obviously prostatitis, because of all of those issues that were just undiagnosed at that time. He wound up actually falling in love with that guy. They've been together for a tremendous, I think, 14 years, if I'm not mistaken, from there. Ups and downs sexually, because of his chronic prostatitis. He was not really truly able to actually enjoy sex anymore. And then with that, his partner wound up going out of the relationship. And obviously that's also another talking point, because I think the communication there was a little bit lacking. And then of course, some STDs came back into their kind of relationship because of him going out. And then that just kind of spiraled to kind of where we are now, which is basically, he's sexless, still with that guy, but not engaging because he doesn't want to put himself even at further risk. But clearly, it's kind of been one thing after another that has really not been in his favor, unfortunately.
So one of the things that immediately struck me in this particular article was the fact that, you know, his experience sexually was affecting his ability to actually enjoy sex. And the reason being is because after he found out that indeed he had, as a result of the gonorrhea, developed a very severe case of prostatitis, he then, anytime he had a flare-up, he would start accusing or start questioning his boyfriend as to whether or not he had gone out again and started fooling around on him when they were continuously still having sex. And I was wondering if maybe you could talk to the psychological aspect of that, right? You thinking that, you know, a flare up could immediately make you think that you're having, that your partner may be having an affair again and starting this whole situation all over again.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's rampant in our community that anytime, you know, if you fart the wrong way, somebody thinks that like you have an STD, you know, and I see that all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. And even in myself, you know, you constantly, you're thinking like, well, shit, is that something? Is it not? What's the situation? And I think that with him, it's just been one negative experience after another, which makes him kind of even more having psychosocial and emotional issues tied to it. And then now it's like on a chronic level where there's such a performance anxiety component to that, because is it going to be painful? Is it not? And then, or am I going to develop a symptom and then think it's, you know, my partner, and then be accusatory and then be able to now kind of actually live daily function without thinking those things. It's just a domino effect, mm-hmm. unfortunately. And I think that, you know, clearly the chronic prostatitis plays a huge issue here, because that, unfortunately, you know, the gonorrhea can go away, can come and go, but now you're left with something that's kind of long standing and is not ever really going to go away. It may be muted, but you're always going to have some of that involved. And now how to discern one from the other, the trust issue. I mean, there's so many issues. That's why when I took on this story, I think you could talk for hours on this, on many different topics as it relates to really just shitty luck.
Yeah. It's insane, right? Because you never think that, that something like gonorrhea is going to end up giving you something or developing something that's really going to just carry through with right. you the rest of your life. So one of the things that I had here that I wanted to ask you was how critical is it to treat STIs before they become excessively damaging to one's overall health that we may need to carry for the rest of our lives? Like, what is an acceptable period of time from the time you develop these symptoms to the time that you're treated that you can actually catch it in time before you do some long-term damage?
It's so variable, because there's people walking around now that have chronic kind of gonorrhea and chlamydia locally, let's say anally, and they don't even know it. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's kind of a variable component to this. With that said, I mean, I think that, and again, I didn't get so much into detail with him just because he wasn't a client of mine in the office, but like, how were they actually checking? We spoke about this last time, making sure that it's oral swabs, it's anal swabs, it's urine check, and blood work. And so obviously the sensitivities out there kind of may not have been to that degree to actually catch anything. Obviously, I think it was also that after subsequent visits of just not getting anywhere, finally he was referred, but maybe that could have been sooner. Mm-hmm. Sometimes because people come back to me with symptoms, sometimes I treat without a full diagnosis, because sometimes you can't necessarily, if it's a gonorrhea that's stuck purely in the prostate, right? Sometimes, you know, you can't, with the chronic prostatitis, you actually need to do kind of prostatic massage to get some of those juices that are actually there in the prostate to come out with urine, or do something where you can kind of understand and then capture actually the positive cells or the positive bacteria that you're able to now make a definitive diagnosis. You know, so I think that there's no right answer with all of this. I think when we speak about like with PrEP and now being every 3 months, I think that you have to analyze your own risk. This was, you know, a one-off, unfortunately, just a terrible luck, right? It was, you know, one person that he hooked up with off of gay.com. You know, you don't know you're going to go bareback. I think the way that I would approach a situation like this is, if you're now going to take a relationship into a different level, I think that it's the best is probably for both of you to go down, get a full STD screening, get HIV screening, blood work, oral, anal swabs, and show each other the results and really be like old school marriage. I don't know. I mean, nobody does that anymore. But I think if you're going to take it to that next level, that you really take the skeletons out of the closet. You talk about your risks, your issues before. Did you have warts? Did you not? Did you get the vaccine? You know, you're now going to a different level sexually, where I think that that's what I would feel comfortable, and that's what I would recommend. You're nodding your head.
We actually had that conversation right during break, where this should be the norm with any new relationship. If you are ready to move on to trusting each other, because it's a trust issue as well. Like, I have to trust my partner to actually not put me at risk. And so if we're going to make the decision to stop protecting ourselves, then we should be able to comfortably say to each other, hey, let's go get a full blood panel before we cross that line. Not just for me, but also for you. Yes, and it should be, I just really don't understand how couples make that step without getting themselves checked. I mean.
Yeah, but I think, again, a lot of places they're checking incorrectly, right?
We spoke about that. This before.
And so, like, you know, are you harboring something? And that's where I think empowering everybody to really make sure from an STD perspective that they're really demanding all of the different,
right,
you know,
a full blood panel, right?
Exactly. And I think especially the bottom itself, you know, when you look at the bottom and you look at the rectal mucosa and the anal area, it harbors so much bacteria and so much kind of irritation from sex. You know, you don't feel internally kind of the pain receptors. You know, you don't feel truly when there's some stuff that's going on higher up. And so you have to really seek professionals. You have to get the swabs. And you have to do a full evaluation. And that could be as much as you want. You know, the Truvada prep routine is every 3 months. But if something is like, there's clients of mine that are like, Evan, I want to see you every month, or I want to do these swabs every month because of kind of where I am. And it may only be that their risks aren't so high, but it's a mental component.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How do we now make sure that everybody feels as safe as they can to engage the way that they want to?
Right. And I definitely think it's important, because I know people that have never gotten tests, and some of the reasons that they avoid getting a test is because they're afraid to find out the results. And that keeps them from going from it. And like you said, there's so many variables when it comes to STIs. And I know STIs can be asymptomatic, or they can lay dormant within someone that might not even know. And now if someone's carrying an asymptomatic STI and it's dormant in their body, they can still transmit that, correct?
Yeah, 100%. And so many times they don't even know it.
Right, exactly.
And that's where it becomes, you know, a major issue. Now, with that being said, I mean, I think one of the things that I mentioned in this is that he did something similar to me when I was married to a woman, that, you know, you go from one relationship right into another, and he didn't actually become gay, right? Because the reality is that, you know, you want to go out and explore and then
right.
understand and then and really go out there. And he went from like one kind of marriage to another, and really didn't live kind of the gay world, where during that time, I think, being exposed to many risks or being exposed to what's the true extent could kind of reevaluate where you like reevaluate your world mentally, emotionally, psychosocially, and then also physically. And then you're able to realize that everybody fucking gets an STD.
Right.
You know, everybody does. There shouldn't be shame with that. It's more of like talking about it, being educated on it, understanding how to manage it, and also seeing different practitioners that support the way you're engaging, not necessarily inhibit that or keep that a bay.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, when you have someone coming to see you for the first time who may have concerns about STIs, what is the routine that you go through with a new patient? Are you upfront asking, hey, you know, this may not be what you're talking about today. This may not be your concern, but I think that, you know, if you're seeing me, this is what I would recommend that we do right now so that we know we can start with sort of kind of like a clean slate and know where we stand. Is that something that you as a doctor take the initiative to do, or are you maybe suggest that patients do that with all their doctors, just walk in and say, I want it all. I want the whole kit and caboodles.
I think that I see a lot of it is, especially because I'm in New York and LA, the exposure to kind of sensitive practitioners is quite a lot. So, you know, a lot of people are coming to me kind of after they've already done all of that stuff, and they now have a specific issue at hand. But yes, there are definitely people that I see that I'll reinforce to find out, well, what did their primary care physician do? What were those results? Was it the actual full spectrum of STD panels that really needed to be done? If there was a little flaw in it, you know, non-accusatory, I'll just repeat everything, making sure that we're all on the same page. I think it's a lot of history taking of trying to figure out issues, you know, and when you look at like chronic prostatitis, was it all stemming from a gonorrhea issue? Was it kind of before in terms of his habits with his ex-wife and not getting off and kind of, you know, having a blue balls issues for years after years and, you know, and not really and just getting hard by guys, but yet not fully getting where he wanted to go. So I think that there's a lot of kind of long-term issues that, yes, we could pinpoint the current gonorrhea issue, but again, it's more of doing a full, more history, a detailed history to give me an understanding. And then from there, doing the standard evaluations to make sure that we're all on the same page. And then it's looking at people's risk to figure out how do we mitigate that? How do we minimize that? And then also how do we support that in a way to continue to minimize it? Now, with that said, we had spoken about before, like prophylactic antibiotics, knowing that, hey, I'm going to the black party and I'm going to be in a sling for the next five fucking days. You know, if I'm that if I'm that guy, do we preemptively treat from an STD perspective and go from there?
She's like, I need to be gay and have a penis.
Sounds like a whole lot of fun.
It is. It's pretty great.
So obviously this man has been, they have been together for well over 14 years, you know, 14, 15 years ago when he first met this guy, you know, PrEP wasn't a thing, but PrEP is a thing today. And it's an amazing tool for us to, you know, avoid further contraction of HIV. But it also opens a lot of doors for the possibility of other STIs because certain a small group of people think that now because of PrEP that you could go back to having unprotected sex, thinking that, you know, HIV is really the only major thing out there that could impact your well-being. Mm-hmm. Do you think that as a result of PrEP and what it does – that people are now willing to take more risk when it comes to engaging a partner unprotected?
I think yes. I think, you know, I see a lot of it. You know, there's another sexual revolution going on simply because of clearly the protective components of PrEP, right? I think one thing to think about is that, you know, when you look at a lot of bottoms are on PrEP, tops, kind of it's all over the place in terms of whether or not they're truly doing that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that a top doesn't harbor an STD. And now that they're not on PrEP, They're not really doing the following protocols of every 3-month evaluations to make sure that there's no issues. And so with that said, I think it's empowering people and practitioners to do that risk assessment, whether someone's on and off PrEP or not, top, bottom, verse, wherever they are, and really kind of create an appropriate protocol depending upon where they are and their risk. And that doesn't necessarily mean that someone's slut or promiscuous at all. It could be that like that one time that person is at that black party fucking that guy in the sling, right? And now he's fucked every single person that that guy has fucked for the last 5 days. And then it just becomes this constant community-based issue that we see a lot in this. Now, with that, from an STD perspective, you know, I think PrEP is wonderful, right? And I think that I also think bareback sex is wonderful. And there's a reason why, and there's a reason why everybody does it, right?
Because it feels amazing.
Right. So I'm not suggesting that, you know, I think condoms are great and we should use them where we want to, but we should not be held to thinking that, you know, you are doing something wrong by going into condomless sex. I think it's now, if you are going to do that and put yourself at some elements, it's risk. It's how do you internalize that and create an environment that is not only minimizing your risk, but the community at large. And I think one other thing to talk about is douching, you know, and this is a whole nother topic, which we can get into. But when people are douching, whether with water, Fleet products, or whether they're doing shower hoses, from a bottoming perspective, that is traumatic. And because that's traumatic, that cleaning effect actually kind of creates pockets of inflammation that allows for higher STD and higher HIV rates. And so with that being said, you now are, we're really in a lot of community-based issues that's affecting all of us. And the question is, how are we as a community going to kind of take ownership of our own risks and everybody else's risks? And now try and mitigate that as much as we can. Prophylactic antibiotics, serial screening, obviously PrEP, taking ownership if you're not using condoms. How are we going to kind of mitigate all of those risks? That's what I think we just have to constantly be talking about.
So that being said, you know, we're talking about the importance of regularly screening if you decide that you're going to be engaging multiple partners or even just your partner in general without protection. From a health insurance perspective, how often will a health insurance company allow you to get these screenings before it starts becoming something that is obviously very expensive to maintain?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of things. One is if the doctor does the right thing from a coding perspective, I think all things are possible. It just depends on who you're actually seeing. With that said, there are also internet-based STD screening programs where you can actually get them delivered to your home. And yes, some of them take insurance and some of them are out of pocket at a minimal cost. And so, you know, if you are purely bottoming and it's isolated from a bottoming perspective, a rectal anal swab for the usual chlamydia, gonorrhea, all that is not terribly expensive. And if that's going to create a emotional psychosocial improvement in the way you engage sexually, I think it's all worth that money. But I think it's one, finding practitioners that align with what you want. And then two, it's communicating how you're actually sexually engaging to now understand that risk and then working together to figure out what's too much. Now, if someone comes to me and they're like, I want to get checked every fucking week, right? I'm like, no, that's not what's going to happen. But I'm more than happy to do it once a month in the beginning to set the stage to show you emotionally that you actually are negative for the first 3 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then we go to like 2 months. And then we go to like 4 months, you know, and we would do something where the ramifications are understood. And then I can prove to you that your sexual practices are actually a track record over the last 2 years of being negative. And then it hopefully creates an emotional response that now says, you know what, I'm actually okay. I am going to go and continue where I am. But if I change my sexual practices, can I reevaluate that program to make sure that we're doing what's right for me? That is the empowerment.
Very I'm good. Sorry, I think we lost you that at the end there.
I said that is the empowerment of all of that, is I think you guys have to take ownership of your own care, because the reality is that unfortunately nobody gives a fuck. So it's like, you know, literally. So I think, you know, that's the moral of the story.
Absolute truth. So I have one last question for you, because I know we don't want to keep you on too long.
Oh, no worries.
But it was mentioned in the article that this particular individual heard of you through a podcast that he was listening to. Was it ours?
I don't know. I don't know.
I thought that too. I was like,
oh, maybe it was.
I'm assuming I'm on yours all the time, and yours is the best. So.
That's what we wanted to hear.
I love him. I will tell you though, before we brought you on live, we were just watching you, do some stuff there, and you got up. Boy, that's a one hell of a tushy on you.
Oh, I didn't know you saw my hole.
But did you not? Did you really not know?
I was just putting on my sneakers. That was all I was doing.
Well,
I get you. Uh-huh.
Yeah, Tommy was like, thank God no one can hear us right now.
Yeah, I was like, we got all the views and all the feels out of that.
Yeah, you guys are so sweet.
We try. So listen, Dr. G, I want to thank you for taking time out of your evening, your afternoon, for joining us once again this month for this month's Tales from the Tale. You know, obviously, a lot of the information that we get on the show from you is very important and critical in you know, giving our listeners an opportunity to learn of the options that they have when they decide that they want to engage sexually, regardless of whether that's safe or not, and in any capacity possible.
Right. And not only just our listeners. I mean, I learned so much from your tales, your blog posts, having you come on, you know, you educate us as well. So I also appreciate it.
Yes, you ruined butt wipes for me.
Yes, no butt wipes. I yell at people. I yell at people all the time.
We still get people. I'm like, I cannot believe that these are not good. Oh my God. I was like, ugh.
I'll come home and my roommate will buy them. And, you know, it'll just be like a normal Monday night. So I'm like three bottles of wine in. So at that point, I just start throwing them at them. I'm like, the doctor said you can't have these no more. It's bad for your health.
I know. We always wind up back to the wife.
We do.
Yes.
You broke a lot of hearts.
A lot of people.
You
did.
You broke a lot of hearts with that.
I see it every day, and people still come in, and they're using wipes, and they're like, why is my asshole itchy? Why is it fucking red? Why is it burn when I'm putting lube on? Why can't I engage the way they want to? And then you look at it, and it looks like a fucking baboon's ass. And you're like, do you use wipes? And they're like, of course I use wipes. You know, I want my ass to be perfect, you know? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it always gets back to the butt wipes.
I'm telling you. Well, once again, thank you today for the view and obviously for the incredible information that we received in tonight's episode. If you guys would like to, you can read the blog post itself. You can go to medium.com, search for Dr. Evan Goldstein. You're going to get not only that blog, but you'll get a list of all other stories that the doctor covers on his blog. They are amazing. There's a lot of informative stuff on there, so we definitely recommend that you guys check them out. You can also go to bespokesurgical.com, where you can get a lot of information on the actual practice, if you would like for Dr. G to be your doctor. And he's on all the social media platforms under Bespoke Surgical. And you guys can, you know, just go follow them. They post a lot of amazing hot pictures all the time on Instagram and on Facebook.
He means healthy.
Yes.
I could vouch for it. He's very gentle. He's been inside me. I recommend it. Definitely get checked out.
Yeah.
You guys are Lord have mercy. You really are. Well, listen, it was a pleasure, and thank you so much. And then, you know, just have your kind of listeners engage with us. Let's find out like what they want to talk about. What are certain things? What do they agree with? What do they not agree with? I think we should do a little bit more of kind of reaching out to everybody to figure out what we should kind of go further from this perspective.
Yeah, sounds good. They don't agree with your assessment on wipes. We know that much.
I know that.
None of us do.
That's right. Stop talking about butt wipes and we'll go into circumcision or something like that.
Have mercy. Well, Dr. G, thank you very much. You have yourself a wonderful evening.
You too, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that was the incredible Dr. G, as always. Awesome. He's just an amazing person to have on the show because he just does such great work. Let me rate this little service because we do that. So what did you guys think? Let's round table this stuff. Elsie.
very informative.
Absolutely.
And I hope what sunk in from his discussion was the fact that you have got to be accountable for your behavior. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's tough for the community because there's a stigma. And mm-hmm. you don't want to go to a medical provider and have them make you feel like it's because you're being reckless as opposed to you are being proactive in your health and the health of your partners and then the community at large,
right.
you know, mm-hmm. by that same token. And I think that we all need to do our part, especially with younger kids, you know, and when they start exploring their sexuality, so that they feel comfortable in walking into their medical care provider and saying, well, you know, this is what I'm engaging in. Please tell me how to be safer. Run those checks. Tell me what I should be looking for so that we're educating, especially our youth, because I expect the two of you to know better than to not check yourselves.
Oh, well, of course. You know, you go and get checked all the time. I mean, we're supposed to. I have great insurance, so why am I not going to do it? Right?
You're welcome.
You made a fantastic point, though, when we were on break, and it has to do with the stigma, and it's something I was thinking about. Not only do people in the gay community, is there a stigma when it comes to promiscuity, or for women when it comes to, you know, men can have as many partners as they want, but if a woman does, she's a hoe.
Right.
Yeah. So there's so many stigmas with gay men and women, but then it also is an age thing. You're so, right. It's not something I'd thought about. You know, I'm 27 years old. Maybe I'm a little old to be the guy going in getting the chlamydia shot in the butt cheek.
Please.
But imagine being a 44-year-old man or a 44-year-old woman.
It's
especially
traumatic.
A woman, a 44-year-old woman. That must be so traumatic to either sneak into a Planned Parenthood if your state hasn't gutted that,
right.
or to even speak with a doctor you've been seeing for 27 plus years and you have to go in and say something's going on down there.
Right. And we have to work on taking away that stigma where, yeah, this guy slept with one guy
right.
that gave him an STD and the poor thing is now traumatized because yeah. it's like, you know what I mean? So it is about education. It happens. There are
literally.
Like Dr. G said, everyone's yeah. going to get an STD.
Right.
If you're having sex, it's going to happen.
Partner. And you've had two partners,
right.
potentially. Yeah. You know, you were married for however long. Then you move on from your marriage. You have one more partner and now you have an STI. Mm. It's like that stigma needs to be removed. We need to have more conversations, especially with the younger kids. It is okay to say to a partner, no, I want you to protect yourself. And if we're going to move away from that, then we both should get screened, mm-hmm. you know, so the stigma gets taken away and it's okay for you to talk to your doctor about it. You know what I mean? And share when we do find a medical provider that's great at making people comfortable about their sexuality and the risks involved, share that, you know, so that people do have the accessibility mm-hmm. to a medical provider that can be very good for them, not only in developing their sexuality, but, you know, them being able to maintain their health. Mm-hmm.
I think that the generational gap, right, between those that grew up during the AIDS and HIV scare and those that came in after, right, I would say people that were born in the late 90s, early 2000s really didn't, like, get the scare of having to die. Like, if you got AIDS, it was a death sentence, right?
Mm. Right.
Or HIV. And so the fact that they never experienced that scary
they've
episode,
gotten complacent.
It's not necessarily that they've gotten complacent in the sense more of that those that are growing up today, those kids that are 15, 16, 17 years old, don't know what it's like to stare death in the face. And so they look at things with a little bit more less regard for their health and personal responsibility. That being said, you know, there is a lot more information out there. We do have a lot more resources, whether that's on the internet, and we have a lot of great, you know, facilities and local centers that are really doing a great job in spreading the word. But, you know, what I want to say to the younger generation that's growing up today, don't take the risk. You know, like Elsie said, be responsible for your well-being. Be responsible for your partner's well-being if you are indeed in a committed relationship. And then go out there and collectively test yourselves and know where you stand before you engage in unprotected sex.
Right. And you made the way that you formed the question earlier when we had Dr. Jan, I found it interesting when we were talking about PrEP. It's if people are taking PrEP, are they taking on more risky behavior? I don't think that they take on risky behavior. I think they think the risk is just gone.
Right.
Yeah. They're not openly going out and trying to experience a risky situation. They just think that because I'm on this pill, I'm good.
It's good. Yeah. Right.
And
right.
I've spoken to many people, and that there is no generational gap in that. I know 40 and 50 year olds are like, oh, because of PrEP, I can now go and start barebacking. And, yeah. and doing that. And again, there's nothing wrong with barebacking. It feels amazing.
But you
and
have people, to be responsible.
You have to be responsible about it because, you know, it's not your own life that you're putting at risk. You're putting your own life at risk, but you're not the only one.
Right.
Your partner as well.
And anyone else that you or your partner may experience sex with. So you're going to, yeah. Right. Like this at the community at large.
Right. And it goes back to education. We have demonized AIDS so much that we essentially have allowed AIDS to eclipse the fact that there are a lot of very serious STIs out there mm-hmm. that are incurable, highly transmittable, and we don't. Mm-hmm. We don't think about them anymore because you're like, oh, I'm on PrEP and that's AIDS. I'm good.
Right.
Like,
yeah. What about syphilis?
And herpes.
Herpes, yeah.
You know, and a lot and of people don't think about the mortality, right? Because they're the conversation around mortality with these are less frequent.
Right.
That they don't think it's real. Oh, I can just take a antibiotic and penicillin and I'm good.
Even when it comes to gonorrhea and chlamydia, if you're going to get an STD, those are the two you, right. Those are the two you sign up
that's
for.
That's what you should go
yeah,
for.
Yeah, exactly. You get a shot in the ass and you take a big dose and you're good to go.
Right.
But it's interesting that this man's problems, his prostatitis, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Came because of untreated gonorrhea. Yeah. The simplest, most curable, treatable STD led to an issue that he's going to live with for the rest of his life.
You know, and I think that there's also needs to be changes in the way the medical community in rural areas view homosexuality or just, you know, unprotected sex, period. Because it's not only men, women can get, you know, STIs as well.
Of course.
And so that conversation needs to be had. And I think that the medical professionals in these rural areas need to do better in communicating that this is not a gay thing, right? When it comes to these, it's a human health problem when you expose yourself this way. And they need to deal with that from a human perspective, but in the same sense, also provide some sort of feeling of comfort in knowing that if you walk into a medical facility or your doctor, that he's one, going to take you seriously, and two, be able to guide you in the right direction from the get-go.
Something that's making me nervous, we've seen these heartbeat laws being put on the books in multiple states. Luckily, a federal judge has put a block on it because it's unconstitutional. Right. That being said, I believe it's Georgia that just closed its last Planned Parenthood.
Tried to, I believe it was.
I
thought there was a stay on that order.
There was a stay on it, right? But but that's not going to be the last one to happen. Like, this is going to happen.
Oh, they're going to try.
They're going to try everything. And those people who are uninsured or underinsured, Planned Parenthood is, first of all, I believe it's less than 10% of it, of what happens there is abortion related.
Yeah.
People going for clinical advice, counseling, women go for health checkups, people go there for STD checkups. And that might be the only beacon of hope for some people in those areas. And now they're just either one or the last leg of one is standing and that's the only place they could possibly go.
There's one state that I believe only has one of them left, and people have to drive hundreds of miles.
Texas had a big thing with that. Texas, I believe someone had to drive like 400 freaking miles.
Yeah, they're just, you know, making it so difficult for people to make that informed decision as to whether or not they want to do something to their body, to their own body, because it's related to how they want to go through life in a healthier way. And I'm sorry, but, you know, 20-something white men making the decision for women to be able to make that decision for themselves when Roe versus Wade has already established that in the U.S., and we've had that precedence sitting on the law, in the law books, and part of our society for well over 50-plus years, they need to stop. They need to really reel it back and just, you know, to take a moment and realize that what they're doing is really putting a large portion of women at risk.
Mm-hmm.
But to Chris's point, it really isn't just about abortion. When you get rid of Planned Parenthood, you are affecting the entire community, not just women who might need to bring their pregnancies to termination. And it affects everything else because, as he says, this might be your only access to health. Yeah. You know, to sexual health. And so you take it away. And I think that a lot of people don't necessarily understand the ramifications of closing a Planned Parenthood because everybody's focused on the whole, you know, it's abortions. Right. Planned Parenthoods provide an invaluable source of
sexual education,
mm-hmm. protection. You know, you don't want me to have an abortion. Maybe you should provide me with some condoms or a pill, you know what I mean?
Or contraception and, you know, it's
or
it's
education.
Education. That's, right. That's the most important thing. No one talked to me about sex except my friends when I was growing up. Like, I learned from the guy who sat next to me who didn't fucking have sex, you know. He was doing the same thing we're all doing, going home, jerking off at night. And that's who I learned, like, about sex. They don't talk about it in school. And because of that, parents don't want to talk about their with their children. That is the most important thing.
And I'm sorry, the birds and the bees just don't cut it. It's too watered down for all the exposure and the dangers that exist when you engage sexually.
Mm-hmm. And it's I'm just gonna put it in perspective. I don't mind sharing this story about myself. Planned Parenthood was, for me, I thought was going to be my last resort. I got into a situation where someone called me and said, hey, I have this, and I have no insurance, and luckily, I ended up going to a walk-in clinic before Planned Parenthood. But just to put it into perspective, first of all, I didn't have anything. I came out negative. They gave me the shot and the pill. But that cost me $450 to walk in. Luckily, I didn't have anything, but I did the right thing. But Planned Parenthood would have saved me, is the actual most affordable way for people who are uninsured or underinsured. So it's incredibly important that we keep Planned Parenthood out there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I think that wraps up this conversation and the segment that we had with Dr. G perfectly. I want to thank you both for being a part of that because it's a very serious conversation and it's important.
Mm-hmm. It is.
But we do have some other things that we're going to be talking about, obviously, and then we're going to wrap up the show. So I believe we can actually just jump right into It's Been a Minute with Mama Cam, right? Because I know Trish is not here, but you know, her commitment to the show is just absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. We do absolutely love her. We got your present. Thank you so much for sending the book. I left it upstairs and I can't show it, but it is amazing. We're going to read it. It is gay history going back well over 500 years. Yeah, there's a lot of amazing information in that book.
And didn't Mama Cam also send us that Time magazine?
That's right. She sent us a Time magazine cover with Pete Buttigieg and his husband on there. Who knows? That could be our future president. So thank you for that as well.
Our future president.
And she also made us these pride flags.
Handmade.
She handmade those and stitched a personal message for all three of us on the back of them. And we love her. So
She's pretty much an official correspondent of Gay Talk 2.0.
And she was also our guest last week.
Yes, she was. That was such a treat. Right. Her and her son came on for a little bit.
Right. And her husband.
Oh, yeah.
It was a family affair. I do have to say that was incredible.
I know.
It really was. To see her in her happiness and her glory with her child and her husband. What a beautiful family.
It was, yeah. I got stuck with you too. Not you. You're awesome.
All right. So, Christopher, why don't you give me a timer? So the goal here, Elsie, I don't know if you know what the It's Been a Minute with Mama Cam is about. She sends us all these stories via email. And so the goal is we try to get to as many as we can within a minute, right? And so we just sort of kind of let people know what it is that she's sending us. And then we post them on our post at the end of the night.
I think you can do this one in a minute.
Oh, we'll try. Okay.
All right. Get it ready. All right. And go.
All right. So thank you, Mama Cam, for sending us. So the first story comes all the way from the state of Florida. Florida politician is under fire for laughing about putting gays to death. That's one. We'll definitely have that on our post tonight. The other one is coming to you all the way from The Advocate. The Advocate actually has a post about Advocates Champions of Pride. It is an amazing array of people that are being highlighted for their work in the gay community. We'll put that on our post as well. We highly recommend that you read that one.
Girl, you gotta hurry up.
Okay. I never thought mom would accept me for being gay. Now she couldn't be prouder.
Yeah.
Sounds like Mama Cam. Mm. You know, Colorado governor signed gay conversion therapy ban. And that was big. So, and I think I'm done.
You're done. You did it in 45 seconds.
Yay.
And yay, Colorado.
So that last one is important. Thank you, Colorado. Colorado, I believe, now becomes the 17th state, including the District of Columbia and the island of Puerto Rico, to ban conversion therapy. That's amazing.
And the governor's gay, right, Colorado?
That's right.
Yeah.
And so imagine being not only a gay man, but you are literally enacting into law legislation that just really helps your community.
That's amazing.
Yeah, incredible feat. I believe he's the first gay governor. Openly gay governor?
Yeah.
I believe. Well, if you think of Harvey Milk, he was a supervisor.
Right. Yeah, he wasn't a governor.
But he was sort of kind of like, you know, an official. But yeah.
Oh, of course he was an official. Yeah,
we'll give it to him.
No, I think he's the first openly gay governor, and he's the one who's, with the stroke of his pen, putting this bill into effect in his state of Colorado. And that must have been a tremendous feeling to see where they've come from.
I know that Hartford, Connecticut had a gay mayor for a while. Mm-hmm. And I know that much. So anyway.
I kind of want to ask how you know that.
I know that because I
had dinner. I met him at the Dorothy Awards. We sat with him and his husband, and we had dinner, and then we went out for drinks after.
So I personally know Pedro because, you know, I
Chris
would go
for precedent.
Yeah. Well, I used to go to all the events that he would host parties at his house. So we were always there and, you know,
very nice guy.
Just having fun with him, his family, his friends. And so he's a great guy. Fantastic
awesome.
Guy.
You know, along the same lines of the law now with Colorado, do you guys know that the WHO actually struck homosexuality off the list of mental disorders finally?
Well, the World Organization also took transgender off the list of things that were considered mental disorders.
So who did it?
Who did it?
I'm confused.
The World Health Organization.
Oh, is that what you were? Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought
the WHO.
Who?
You were thinking the band, right?
I know the WHO.
Do you?
I do know the WHO.
That's a huge.
Yes, it is.
It's because when we talk about normative conversation and we talk about taking away the stigma, that's a huge thing. Mm-hmm. Where you now have a world organization saying to other countries, no, you don't get to call this a mental disorder anymore, and so you don't get to treat it as such.
Right.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's universal. That goes worldwide for all, you know, developed nations. And those that are developing now have something to look at and say, okay, well, this is how we need to move forward with this particular terminology.
Because now, if it's not a mental disorder, then you don't get to, you know, run electricity through somebody's brain trying to tell them that there's something wrong with their brain.
Exactly.
You know, so.
This will probably lead to more conversion therapy bans.
Yeah,
of course. It'll make it that much easier. And I think that this kind of, proclamation also helps institutions like our Supreme Court to make decisions based on, you know, what is for the greater good.
Absolutely. I was actually very excited in conjunction with the Colorado ruling and the actions by the WHO, because now you can no longer say to someone, I'm going to submit you to this. So it's now by law, you cannot justify conversion therapy worldwide. You know what I mean? So it'll take us some time to actually get countries to follow suit, but it is now something that you cannot do because you have no way of justifying.
That's
it.
Right.
It is not a mental disorder, so you cannot treat it as such.
Right.
That's right.
And it's going to start here with America. Like America, some people don't want us to be the one who has to grab every other country by the hand and lead them down the path to the right way. But that's where we are.
But I will tell you this, we have not been for the past 2.5 years. Mm. It just seems like we just can't win with this person in the White House. And
we almost made the whole episode, I think, without referring to this.
So all I have
to say is this, to the people of the UK, to the people of the UK, you guys are amazing. They're literally projecting like President Barack Obama approval rating 77%, Trump 13%. It's hysterical. And then they projected another picture of I can't remember what it was, but also the blimp is back.
The blimp,
the crying the baby Trump blimp. Yes. Oh my God, it's lovely. They just know how to do it. So thank you to the people of the UK and London for doing what you do, because you guys just really make me smile.
They were standing outside Buckingham Palace because he's having dinner there tonight. Well, I mean, it's already past dinner time there, but they were just shouting go home and banging pots and pans just to make it as uncomfortable as a meal as that man could ever have.
That's amazing.
Just sit there and hear clink, 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 clink the whole
Can
time.
You imagine? I would die. I would love to be there. I would like serially, I would go with my caldero. My caldero and what are el cucharón. That's, you know, Spanish. Rice
for
cooker.
Yeah.
That's what it is. All right. So listen, let's jump to two more things and then we're going to bring this home. So next up, we have our Gay Talk term. And of course, because Elsie is our guest host, she got to choose it today. So she's going to tell us what our Gay Talk term is. But before you do, our Gay Talk term is brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com.
All right. Here we go. Elsie.
So I kind of had picked two. Because I'm always referring to my lady penis, but apparently, according to this here book, I can actually be hung as a donut.
Oh my God.
So that's one of our
That is amazing.
Oh God.
So thank you, book.
Oh my God. And that book is Gay Talk Bible.
I know.
That's one big wide on.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's so funny.
The other one, because this is actually a conversation I have with my friends all the time, when people are like, oh, I didn't really want to have sex, so I just blew him. What? So that brings us to head date.
Head date.
Date.
What is head date?
Perform the fellatio in order to avoid anal... like that's worse. Anal bombardment.
Oh my God, it
during
sounds
a
like
date.
A war.
I know. Like but you see, here's my thing, and maybe it's because, you know, we talked about how girls are socialized different. Uh-huh. I feel that you putting your penis in me is a lot less involved than me actually having to put your penis in my mouth. Is it just me?
No, giving head is work, girl.
I know.
Yeah, you can just, if you're getting plowed, you can just lay there.
No, and then you
That is exactly my point, Christopher. Thank you.
And then she can just go, and fake, and, you know, do all
and
that good
stuff.
And
then we're done. But it is actual, you have to be actively involved. Mm-hmm. So, no head dates for you.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Not
no,
right
but
our
it's,
way, anyway.
It's so funny. No, but it's like giving head. It's like you can get lockjaw, and that's painful.
I've had lockjaw.
You know, because when you have those that like to... you know, smoke weed or whatever, and they're stoned, and it takes forever to come.
Ain't nobody got time for that. Just put your penis in me, wrap it up. Come on.
And then, you know, but then it takes forever for them to ejaculate, and then you're literally just going up and down, up and down. You get a neck cramp. The next morning you wake up, you need a fucking neck brace.
You burp, a little something comes up. The waiter can smell it when you're having breakfast.
It's too much work. Like, how is that worse than just laying there? You know, like, come on.
I love it. All right, so what? For, just a quick repeat our two Gay Talk terms for this episode.
So hung like a donut.
Love it.
I love it. Oh. And head dates.
I love it. Well, Elsie, thank you so much for going through that book and finding those two amazing terms, because they're making me laugh hysterically. And Chris, what do we have, senor?
Well, we're going to go into On This Day in Gay History, brought to you, of course, by GayRealEstate.com. Yes. So
really?
On this, you'll get it eventually. You'll get it eventually. Trish can take next week off, too. So, on this day in gay history, when? June 3rd in the year 1818. Wasn't that the year you were born, Tom?
Yes.
Ah, right. I knew it sounded
She's
familiar.
Nasty.
Where in the nation of Greece, the Lion of Charonia was discovered. British architect George Ledwell Taylor discovers a gigantic statue of a lion in Charonia, Greece. It is determined that it was erected by the Sacred Band of Thebes, which was an elite force of Theban army consisting of 150 pairs of male lovers. in the fourth century BC to honor their dead. The statue was surrounded by 254 buried skeletons.
Sounds like a huge orgy.
Probably was.
So, and by the way, Sharonia is not a word.
Dang.
Well, thank you, Christopher.
Of course. I love talking history.
Oh, it's amazing. And how did you do in your history class?
Oh, I ended up getting all my grades back. I got an A in political science, an A.
Of course you did.
In history, an A minus in bio. I'll take it.
Okay.
And I got an 86 on my stats final, which means I got a C plus and I passed math and I'm never taking another fucking math class again. Dilly dilly.
All right. Well, listen, guys, if you love the show, make sure that you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By subscribing, you get the latest and greatest, and LC and all those amazing people of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser. You can also support us on Patreon, which is a service that allows you, our listeners, to support our show with a monetary donation that we can collect monthly. And it also gives you access to the live video stream of the show so that you can see us live and in color. Christopher.
Yes, next week we welcome author F.E. Feeley Jr. to discuss his book, Closer.
That's right. Yeah, we're super excited about that.
We are very excited about
it's
that.
More a little on the fantasy side, but I'm super excited because it's sort of kind of dark, and I like those kind of stories. But yeah, it's amazing. So, Chris?
Of course, and we want to thank you to our frequent returning guest host. She usually sits in that chair right over me when we've had enough of Trish. So Elsie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. I love it here.
It's always fun. You know, Trish will be back with her normal screeching next week. Don't worry, Hans. But yes, we always love when you having you on. Your insight, your wit, your humor, and you have the best donut. We always want your donut in that chair.
That's right.
We always want that donut in that chair.
Oh gosh. Christopher.
Can we put a rubber on it, please?
Yes, please.
Oh, my God. All righty, ladies and gentlemen. As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Tom announces, you can find us on social media on Facebook under Gay Talk 2.0, on Instagram under Gay Talk 2.0, on Twitter under Gay Talk 20, and of course, you can email us at gaytalk2.0@gmail.com.
Tom, take it away.
If you need to reach out to us, you can do so by going to our website, clicking on the Contact Us tab, which is located at the top of the web browser. There you can leave comments, you can suggest topics, you can even send us a question for the cast.
Or
Dr. G, or an individual host, or Elsie. Anyone. Just send us an email. And we can answer those questions for you right on the show. You can also call us. You can do so by calling 334-GAY-TALK. And if you need those digits, it is 334-429-8255. Now, Elsie, are you going to remember what we're doing next?
No. Grow up.
Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gents, that is our show. We want to thank you, and you all have a fantastic night.
Bye-bye!
She got it!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more Dish.